Rise and shine, Arizona. Good morning and welcome to Rosie on the House. You're tuned in to your Arizona Saturday morning tradition for 28 years. It's 8 o'clock, so we're in the outdoor living hour, and let's see who we can find back here in the yard to talk to us today. Looks like we have Mr. John Eisenhower, and we call him down out of the palm trees up there. Just enjoying the view, probably. Getting some pictures of the sunrise this morning, enjoying a little crisp breeze as he shimmies his way down. He's got a November checklist for us and our trees. Let's see what he's brought for us today.
I was actually just brushing sawdust off my shoulder. This is God's truth. Just a few minutes ago, because I noticed that I was cutting a branch above my head the other day with a handsaw, and I was getting, and the wind was blowing all the sawdust onto my jacket. Yes, it is that time of.
So you said the other day. Is that how long it's been since you've showered? It's still on you?
No, I did shower, but my jacket has still got those little stuff stuck in all the. In the fleece. It's that time of year where you've got this sort of heater on in the morning in your car, and then you got the air conditioning on in the afternoon. It's a sort of an in-between season in Arizona. It's an interesting time for our trees, too. I want to talk a little bit today about what to do in this in-between season.
And as we get to those talking points, you can join the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888 Rosie for you. Text questions to 411-923 or email info@rosieonthehouse.com.
You know, our winter season is a time to slow down a little bit with our pruning. We don't do a lot of pruning on evergreen trees, but it's a great time to be thinking about pruning all your deciduous trees, the ash and the pecan and the elm and the mulberry, all your trees that lose their leaves this time of year. It's a great time to be targeting them for pruning. It's also a great time to be planting deciduous trees. There's a lot of bare root plant stock available in the nurseries, both trees and shrubs and roses. A great time to get those into the ground in the bare root varieties. But also even containerized deciduous trees can be planted this time of year successfully, and there's a lot of those available as well. I kind of want to put a focus today on the what is really my favorite non-indigenous tree. I have several favorites, the ironwood, for instance, and our state tree, the blue palo verde, our native trees from Arizona. Those are among my favorites. But there's one tree that stands out among the non-native trees that does really well here in the low desert. And it's also a deciduous tree. It's one that loses its leaves in the winter, or it can if we have a fairly cold winter. And it's the Chinese elm tree, Ulmus parvifolia. The Chinese elm is an amazing tree. It's not to be confused with the Siberian elm, which in parts of the country is considered a trash tree. Those of you who've been transplanted from other parts of the country who are familiar with the Siberian elm, it's a very fast-growing, weak-wooded, rather brittle tree that breaks in ice storms and has a terrible reputation across the country. The Chinese elm is different. It's a much harder wood. It has great elegant growth structure. It grows to be about 40 to 60 feet tall. You need to have some room for it, but it provides an incredible canopy-shaped tree and as I said, an open growth form, so you see and enjoy the branch architecture. A lot of trees are so densely branched that you can't really even appreciate the interior growth like your Texas ebony and other trees like that. This has an open form, so you can actually see into the interior of the tree without doing an unnecessary amount of pruning on the inside, just the structure itself. It's created by actually more obtuse angles of attachment between the branches. And as a result, you get this very angular look, but the branches grow away from one another dramatically. So you have this really a pretty wide tree, just about as wide as it is tall. And it's pretty fast growing, so it achieves its landscape purpose quickly. Landscapers love them. Tree owners love them. And you know who also loves them are municipalities. It's become one of the most durable street trees in all of Phoenix. Dr. Chris Martin at ASU did some research years back, and he did some pretty extensive study of all the street trees that are planted around the various municipalities here in Phoenix. And amazingly, the Chinese elm came out on top, even beating out a lot of our native trees that are planted in traffic islands in very difficult places. This Chinese elm is one of those bulletproof, durable trees, doesn't have a lot of natural enemies, and I love the tree. I love climbing in it. It doesn't have thorns. It's one of the most pleasurable trees to actually climb and trim because it's so beautiful, and as I said, no thorns. That's another positive feature.
Now, how long will a Chinese elm live?
Well, trees will live as long as they have adequate rooting space. The limiting factor, in fact, the average age for a municipal tree across the U.S. is 8 years. Is that amazing? The longevity of our trees, is that short a lifespan?
But that's the tree growers don't have a problem with that.
No, that's right. They'll be replaced, happy to replace those for you. But trees will grow, an average tree like a Chinese elm could live 100 years plus if it has adequate rooting space and adequate care. And it's managed properly with good pruning at regular intervals. Unfortunately, we have limitations and a lot of environmental stresses and other issues that affect our trees, and as a result, we don't usually get that kind of life out of them. That being said, speaking about the rooting space, if you do plan to plant a large shade tree and you've got the room for it. And when I say the room for it, you want at least 10 or 12 feet to the nearest hardscape element, like pavers or a sidewalk or driveway or a building, but preferably even more than that. If you could get 20 feet away, if your tree's going to have a 40-foot spread at maturity, you want to be 20 feet away from the nearest object. If you've got that kind of a place, even a lawn setting or an irrigated lot, Chinese elms are amazing. If you have a smaller space than that, and you maybe only have 10 feet to the nearest building or something, that's still probably enough room to keep you from having too much problems with the root encroachment. But you have to realize you're going to be limited with how far those branches can grow. They're going to be out and over, hitting those edges of the roof pretty soon. Of course, if you can get it up high enough to arch over your roof or other objects, then you're good to go. But if you've got one of those larger areas, planting spaces, and you want to fill it with an absolutely beautiful tree, Chinese elm is the way to go.
That's our tree of the month, and we'll have a couple points on it throughout the remainder of the broadcast. It is November. You had mentioned pruning. Now, just because we have a deciduous tree doesn't necessarily mean, and it's time to prune, doesn't mean it needs to be pruned.
No, but if you're going to be pruning your deciduous trees annually, it's a good time to target them in the winter, December, January, while the leaves are off. It's usually the best time. The trees are dormant and they are ready to hit the road running in the in the spring.
Now, will a dormant tree need to be watered?
Good question. Yes, they do. All trees need to be watered. Of course, the water demands are a little bit lower in the winter. If we've had seasonal rains, of course, you want to not be putting water on top of those. But people think that they can just shut the water off during the winter because the temperatures have dropped.
Well, and I have overheard conversation of somebody saying, well, if there's no leaves on the tree, there's no point to water. You're just wasting the water.
No, there's still root activity going on underground. In fact, the research shows that even though the top growth has stopped and the tree's gone into dormancy, the root activity continues because the soil temperatures are still warm. They're insulated from the cold as well as insulated from the heat in the summer. And the root activity is quite active, actually, and they're continuing to colonize soil, absorbing nutrients and water, and storing those nutrients for spring growth in a couple of months. So, yeah, we actually, for that reason we mentioned last month, we'd like to encourage fall fertilization. Research has shown that the fall fertilization is probably the best time to fertilize because those stored nutrients in the fall are ready for that spring push of growth in this a couple months later. But the same with water. Occasionally, watering in the winter is a good idea. We recommend a nice deep soaking, maybe once every month or two. If we get a nice seasonal winter rain, of course, you can back off. Another concern, too, I wanted to mention, those of you who have your winter lawns put in, you can start backing off on the water once the grass gets established and start to modify that. We've had a number of problems of customers calling us because of tree-related issues, trees dying, declining. And we found out that the trees are just simply waterlogged because of the winter. They're in a lawn setting, and with the winter grass, frequent watering that's needed to get the grass germinated and up is way too much for the trees. And we've had a couple of trees that have died recently. So just be careful that you're not keeping that root zone completely waterlogged. Tree roots need oxygen. They need that soil profile to dry out sufficiently between waterings so that water, that oxygen gets into those soil pores and is made available for that root metabolism to take place.
Which can be hard because the rye will grow in shade, and that's a really pretty effect.
Yeah, and we are recommending, people to start backing off now. They don't need that two or three or four or five time a day watering, of course. But then people, when they back it off, they still are watering every day, which I don't even think we need. Consult your landscaper, of course, but we're backing ours off to every two or three days, just like we would in the summer, just to keep the soil moist. But with these cooler temperatures, the water's not, we're not, we don't have that evaporation. So your soil is going to remain moist for a lot longer period of time. You might even be able to put your timer on for once a week and see how well your winter grass does. You might be surprised.
Talking Trees with certified arborist John Eisenhower, also owner of Integrity Tree Service. He joins us monthly to go through our monthly tree calendar. If you've got a question, jump on the line now at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE4U. You can text to 411-923 or email info@rosieonthehouse.com. We'll get to listeners' questions right after this.
Why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
Biff might want you to leave, but we hope you stay. We've got certified arborist John Eisenhower with Integrity Tree Service here to take your questions at Rosie on the House.
And we do have a full line of calls in queue. We'll get to right after our one quick point on olive trees. If you have an olive tree and a sidewalk, you're probably not a fan of olive trees.
Well, unless you had them sprayed last year and they're just doing fine. No, olive, this is the time of year to be thinking about getting your olive trees sprayed so they don't produce fruit. The spraying starts after the first of the year, but we encourage you, if you are going to do an annual trimming on the trees, why not do it just before the spray gets done so you'll get better coverage? One of the issues with spraying olive trees is you need to get the spray into the clusters of leaves, which are pretty dense. And if the tree is really, really thick, sometimes the coverage is dicey and you might have some olives that end up getting through. So, yeah, this is a time of year to be getting on the calendar, get your trees pruned and then sprayed as we turn the corner into the new year.
Let's start with Lou, who's called in first, and he's on the line. Good morning, Lou. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I had a question regarding seeds. I grew, a number of years ago, I grew three peach trees and one apricot from seeds. I tried the same thing last year, and they all mildewed or rotted in the potting, whatever they're called, little pots. I wonder if there's an additive or something that I could add to the seed that would assist them in germinating.
I don't really have an answer to that. I'm not sure what the problems are for, a rot, of course, is going to be accelerated or facilitated by too much water. So you might have had that planting medium too wet, but I'm not sure what the you might want to consult with somebody who does propagation from seed. One of the nurseries might have an angle on that I'm not aware of. But yeah, you want to really moderate your do you remember if you did anything differently the first year when you were successful?
Well, I probably did water too much. I think that you're probably right about that. And the seeds kind of, when I inspected them after they didn't germinate, they were kind of like mildew. I mean, they were all powdery. They were a gray powder inside the seedling, for want of a better word. But anyway, I sure appreciate it. I'm going to try it again this year. I've got a bag full of seeds, and I'm going to go back at it and see if I can get some of those to germinate.
Well, yeah. Do you mind holding for a second? I was going to ask you, how are the other trees doing that you were successful with?
They're doing quite well. This is the second year we got peach crop off, and the two trees I kept, we got about 20 pounds of peaches, and the apricot tree, regrettably, pack rat destroyed it, and I lost my apricot tree, but the two peach trees did extremely well, I think. They're a lovely-tasting peach.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that success story. I just love to hear about 20 pounds of peaches. That's news. That's music to my ears. That's great. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
Nothing like a fresh can of home-jarred peaches in the middle of the summer.
Well, to be able to do it in Arizona is what just is the kicker, you know? To be able to have beautiful fruit trees here in the low desert is just so cool.
Now, if you are interested in fruit trees, but you're not quite as aggressive as Lou in wanting to propagate your own, it doesn't matter where in the States you are, but there's a gentleman out of Phoenix, Greg Peterson, who was on with us last week when we were live at Sanderson. He has his fruit tree program. You can go to urbanfarm.org right now, sign up for what fruit trees you want. They get delivered in January. You plant them. A couple years later, you're in business.
Yeah, here, urbanfarm.org.
Let's go to Grant next on the line. Actually, you know what? Grant, hang tight. We'll take you first after the break. I think we can get Jim in and out before we have to go on break here. Good morning, Jim.
Hello. I heard a news report that some of the great citrus groves next to Falcon Field and Mesa are going to be removed and commercial development is going in. And these great citrus trees are right next to Falcon Field. And I'm wondering, they said some of the citrus trees are 60 years old. And I'm wondering, would they be able to save some of those citrus trees, like put them in a box, you know, root box? These are great citrus groves that are next to Falcon Field, and I think it's kind of sad that they're going to remove them, the whole grove.
Right. You know, I'm sure that the value of the citrus trees has to be weighed against the expense of moving them. Citrus does have a productivity curve, and groves can become productive, and then they reach a maturity, and then senescence. And then they're not as productive as they once were. And at 60 years, they might not be at that place where they're a valuable transplantable tree. May not be worth the trouble. It would be easier to put a new tree in and grow it to maturity and have it be much more fruitful. So, but an interesting thought. I'm sure that people are who do transplanting would be interested in that, if that were the case, if they were had a value and could be transplanted easily enough.
And I think a challenge you would see in trying to transplant the grove is those trees are used to being in a grove. They're protected. Mm-hmm. The ones in the middle don't, you know, only the top see sunlight. You take that individually and you stick it in someone's yard, and it's got sun where it hasn't had sun for years and years because it's been protected by the other citrus.
Right.
You're not going to see the same kind of production, I would think. But you could, companies like Arizona Big Tree Movers, Bonnie Irvine.
Yep.
If you were interested, you could probably get in touch with her, and you'd have to find who the developer is and organize some kind of trial.
Want me? If I don't see a ribbon around the old oak tree.
Call now to get your tree questions answered by ISA certified arborist John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service.
What does that mean? ISA certified. Why should that stand out to me?
Well, an ISA certified arborist is an arborist that has met certain qualifications as laid out by the International Society of Arboriculture. And it's a pretty rugged test. They have about a 40% fail rate on the first time, which is just tells you the difficulty it is to become a certified arborist.
Okay, all right. So you're setting me up to do this to you, John.
I am.
Did you fail your first time?
No, I didn't.
Oh, congratulations. I didn't know that, but no. I just, inquiring minds want to know these things.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. No, it's a tough test, and it doesn't guarantee you're going to get a great person to work with, but you do know that they have a certain level of education that the next guy doesn't have, and that's a good place to start.
They don't do personality profile in that?
Well, just like everything else, you know, people can get their certifications, get their degrees, get their education, but yet they may not be very ethical. But if you are wanting to work, you want somebody who knows what they're doing and they're not going to mess your trees up, because people can mess up trees and they can screw them up beyond remediation with one pruning cycle where they just do the wrong things, make the wrong pruning cuts. And if you want to someone who can handle that that responsibility, a good place to start is getting a certified arborist. You can look and get on the ISA website. You can actually go to treesaregood.org. I believe it's treesaregood.com or .org. And you can put in your zip code search for a certified arborist in your area. And you won't be disappointed. Also, it gives you several radiating from your zip code area. It will show you the ones closest to you and list them. So you can call two or three and interview a few people and find someone you're comfortable working with, and you'll be off to a good start. Of course, if you want to call us, we work valley-wide as well at Integrity Tree Service. We'd love to earn your confidence.
That number is?
602-788-0005. You can also put in a request for a free estimate by going to our website at itreeservice.com, the letter itreeservice.com.
We've got our November talking points, but before we get to those, we're going to get to you, the Arizona homeowner, who you're the whole reason we're here every Saturday morning. So let's get to it. Grant starts us off this segment. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, John. Thanks for taking my call. I got a question for you in regards to, I believe it's an ash tree. The landscaper told me it was an ash tree. It's about 16 years old, and I noticed some of the limbs are starting to die. The tree or the leaves are just dying. This started happening probably in August. It's been beautiful all the way up till now, but it's only certain limbs. What could that be, or what do you suggest?
Well, it could be something very, very minor. It could just be an environmental stress. There are some of our ash trees here in the valley do have some issues, and they will present symptoms late summer, early fall, like you're describing, with some single branches dying back. And we've done some investigation over the years and found that those trees that lose those individual branches, but the rest of the tree remains healthy, go on to be fine. Others, you know, lose limbs. Maybe sometimes they'll lose a limb or two every year, and it's a little disconcerting because they die all the way back to their points of attachment normally at the trunk. But we haven't found a reason for it. Some people are calling it ash blight, which is kind of a catch-all term for something we don't really understand. There's been quite a bit of research, actually, in that direction. But there's also a very serious pest that specifically attacks ash trees, and it's the carpenter worm. It's a moth that lays her eggs in the crotches of the branches, and then when the eggs hatch, the larva burrows down into the crotch of that where the branch is attached to the larger stem, and they begin to feed on the heartwood in the tree. That is a very serious problem, which is killing a lot of ash trees around town. You might want to get a certified arborist to come and positively identify what if it is a carpenter worm issue. It's pretty serious. Something you might look for is near the crotches of the branches that are dying back, look for any evidence of small holes, about 3/8 inch diameter, and look for some frass. It looks like sawdust. That's around those holes mm-hmm. in the trees. Sometimes it'll pour out. The sawdust will drop down into lower parts in the trees. Sometimes even accumulating on the ground, but below the tree. Those are telltale signs that you have carpenter worm. And if you do have carpenter worms, you need to get the tree looked at immediately. There may not be a remedy, but it might be a good thing to take the tree out. There is no real effective cure for once a tree is infested with carpenter worms. We recommend removing the tree as quickly as you can so that the insects don't spread to other ash trees in the area.
Gotcha. And so it's shedding right now. Is that normal? if I recall, it shedded this time last year. I noticed all the leaves are falling off it.
Yes, yeah. Ash trees are fully deciduous. Well, they're semi-deciduous if we have cooler weather, and if they're under a little bit of stress, they will drop leaves in the winter. The healthier they are and the warmer the winter, sometimes our semi-deciduous trees like the elm and the ash can hold their leaves almost the entire winter. But if there's colder weather, they'll start to drop their leaves right now. That's not unusual.
How old is your ash tree, Grant?
It's 16 years.
Now, I don't know how true this is, but I had overheard a conversation at the annual tree conference that a lot of people are classifying the ash as an ornamental tree instead of a legacy tree, because after about 25 years, they're kind of past the point of investment to keep them going because their life expectancy is on its way out. So they start replacing them at about 25 years, so a lot of people aren't doing that anymore, because by the time you do get a fully developed shade tree that's 25 years old, you don't want to start over.
Yeah, this is true. Well, best of luck, and thank you for that call. Appreciate that.
As we go south to bring Emilio in from Tucson, we actually had a call earlier, a gentleman named Elroy, who wanted to know about the live oak tree, and is that a good selection for the desert?
Oak trees are great. We love the live oaks that we see around town. I think they're one of the an underused tree in our landscape. They're really bulletproof. These are not deciduous. They're evergreen trees. Hold their leaves all year long. They have more of an upright growth habit. So if you want a tree that has a little not so wide, we talked about those elm trees being too close to a house if you're 10 feet away. The oak tree would be a great tree for that smaller space where you don't have quite the – they're only going to be about 20 feet wide, and they're going to be 40 to 50 feet tall. So they grow taller than they grow wide. And I love them. They're just a great tree. They're very easy to maintain, very low maintenance requirement.
Appreciate the call. All right, let's go to Emilio in Tucson. Welcome to the broadcast.
Yes, I've got a – well, I call it China berry. Some kind of umbrella or something? That's the real name for it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The China berry umbrella tree. Texas umbrella tree, they call them.
Yep. Is it too early to... I got the one in the front is still got a lot of all the leaves in it. The one in the back, I guess it got cold or something. They all dropped the leaves. Is that too early to start pruning those or...
No, this is a good time of year. You know, you're maybe a little bit early if you want to be technical with your the main reason we're pruning the deciduous trees in the winter is there's not as much issue with sap flow when the trees are in full dormancy. We have such a long growing season here in Arizona. You could even start on those trees now. It's not that big you're close enough to the target season that this would be great. Interesting that you have the trees dropping the leaves in the backyard and they're not so much in the front. Again, just simple environmental stresses can change the leaf drop with our various trees. We'll see a row of trees, and some of them drop the leaves early than the ones that have a little bit better environment, might have a few more stored nutrients, a little bit different microclimate. They're going to be dropping the leaves a little bit later in the season. And interestingly, you'll notice that in the spring, the tree that drops its leaves latest probably puts them on earliest, and it's just a healthier tree for whatever environmental reasons there are. And then the other tree that's dropping them early now will probably put leaves on later in the spring. It's just a matter of health.
We appreciate the call. Let's move to Dorothy at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you with her acacia tree. Good morning, ma'am, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. I believe it's an acacia tree, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's huge. The green part is just gorgeous on it. But about 5 years ago, I would say about three feet from the tree, there was like a brown thing on the ground. And anyway, since then, we realized what it is. It's a huge, huge root that is coming, and now it's gone. It's at least 3 to 4 feet long and quite big around. I would say in diameter probably 4 inches now. There's another little one next to it coming out. My question is, can we cut those off? I'm so afraid that that's going to come and go under the flagstone and it, where the house is. I mean, it's so I don't know if I can cut them off or not.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. You're not alone with your concerns for those roots that, as a tree matures, those roots do get larger. You have a couple of options, and I probably won't be able to give you the right option to choose without seeing the tree itself. But sometimes you can trim those roots, completely remove them, cut them at their point of attachment at the tree, and then follow them as far as you can and cut them off and actually remove them from the landscape. You'll be surprised that sometimes, even though it's a significant root, in terms of the percentage of root mass that it represents, it's a pretty small amount of live tissue that you're actually taking away from the tree. So, occasionally we'll just advise our customers to just go ahead and take those offending roots out, the ones that you are concerned most about. If we decided it wouldn't be a good idea to take that root out, sometimes you can go to the flagstone, the edge of the flagstone, and trench down and insert a root barrier, a product that will prevent the roots from getting underneath the hardscape. That's another option. But probably best to either shoot us a photograph, go on the website and send us an email and include a photograph, or call during the week and arrange to have one of our certified arborists come by and take a look, and we could give you a little bit better, more accurate diagnosis of the issue.
Let's hit a couple points quickly on our November Talking Trees checklist. We've hit all of spraying. We've hit trimming deciduous trees.
Well, of course, we want to be thinking about frost protection this time of year. If you do have trees that you want protected from the frost, be sure you call to get that scheduled as soon as you can if you're going to have some assistance getting that done. We actually cover some pretty large trees this time of year for some of our clients, and would be happy to take a look at yours. But we need to get on the calendar pretty quick because we're backed up, and we hate to see that cold snap come and people are scrambling to get that work done, and we're too busy to try to help out. So that's something to be thinking about. And also, if you're doing the work yourself, be sure you get your materials in hand. It seems to be every time that first weekend comes where we've got the cold weather, there's a run on frost cloth, and sometimes people are finding it hard to get. So if you plan on doing that, be sure you go out and get your materials, have them ready to go.
We're in the yard with certified arborist John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. Call with your questions right now at 1-888-ROSIE-4U.
Cheryl's next on the line with a question for Mr. John Eisenhower.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, very well, you? Thank you.
I have a question about a red-leaf plum tree. At the entrance to my home, on either side of my walkway leading up to the front door, I've used the red-leaf plums on either side of the walkway as a focal point. In the last 2 years, I've replaced 3 red-leaf plum trees. The one on the right side of the sidewalk is eternally happy. The one on the left side of the sidewalk has died 3 times. I've had 3 separate trees. And the soil appears to be the same. The shade appears to be the same. I'm just curious if you have any tips on what makes these particular trees possibly more fragile. I'm obviously trying to replace and have one on either side of the walkway, but I'm not having any success.
Well, without seeing your location, I wouldn't really be able to say, but these are pretty temperamental trees. They are a classic ornamental tree. They have a pretty short lifespan, as for the most part. We don't see too many of them living beyond about 12 or 15 years. If you have a 20-year-old purple leaf plum in the low desert, you're very, very fortunate. They just have a relatively short lifespan. You know, I wonder if maybe it's the planting practices. You know, you want to be very, very careful that you don't plant your trees too deep in the soil. We find that that's one of the most common causes of tree decline and death, is it's planted too deeply. Even a couple of inches of soil above the root collar can kill a tree quickly, especially if it's getting watered heavily and that root zone is not drying out. And also the fungal pathogens can attack the trunk tissue that's buried below the soil level. So be sure that when you plant the tree, you dig down and find the root flare, and be sure that's at or slightly above the soil grade when the tree's planted, and you'll be off to a really good start. If there's a chance they've been planted too deep, that probably is your reason that you're losing the trees, is they just are too deep in the soil.
And oftentimes when somebody digs a hole, they'll over-dig, backfill it with compost, and then put the tree on top. You don't want to do that. It's more important. The soil around the root mm-hmm. is more important than the soil underneath it. Leave that bottom hard.
Yeah, and exactly. You never want to dig deeper than the actual root ball itself. And also, the planting medium is quite often a very loose textured soil, and it will often settle. So when we drop a plant into our surrounding clay soil, sometimes over time that planting medium will break down, and we'll find the tree just naturally settling. So we recommend putting the tree in slightly above grade to allow for settling, and you'll be really happy with the results.
Raleigh and Chandler's next on the line. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call. About 5 years ago, we bought a very large live southern oak with a lot of what we thought was like artistic branches, lower branches that kind of give it a nice shape. But now that it's getting bigger, those branches, are getting taller and more straggly looking. Have you seen a live southern oak with like these artistic branches, smaller branches coming out instead of just the upright?
Yeah, I think I know what you're referring to. It gave the tree a little more fullness when it was smaller and a little more branch architecture lower on the trunk, which is great. But of course, those upper branches are going to grow way taller and eventually leave those sort of lagging behind. What are your thoughts now? Do you feel like you want to think about taking them out or what?
Yeah, I'm curious because some of the lower branches are actually pretty large. A couple of them, and I'm not sure if we made a mistake by purchasing that kind of a live oak, or it should now be trimmed to be more upright.
Yeah, and those depending on the type you did purchase, there are several cultivars of the live oak that have a different structure. One is the Cathedral, which is tends to be a little more upright, and then the Heritage tends to be more of a rounded tree form. And it sounds like you might have the Cathedral with a more upright branching, and then those side branches probably don't quite match the overall structure of the tree. And that's a tough one. Maybe you could shoot us a photograph, and I might be able to give you a couple of photos of the tree, one from a distance and then maybe one a little closer up to the trunk. And with the ease of the digital transfer of photos, we are doing a lot of long-distance consultations and helping people answer questions like yours. So feel free to shoot me a couple photos if you'd like.
We had a couple points that we hadn't got to on the November. You can go to itreeservice.com, click on your tree calendar, go to November. The rest of your bullet points are there as we wrap up this hour. Talking Trees with John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service, itreeservice.com to schedule a consultation with one of his certified arborists. Or the phone number
is 602-788-0005.
Our tree of the month was the Chinese elm. We've got a nice picture of that posted as well. I'm thinking I'm going to do this. I've got an ash that died. I'm thinking
great
leading
replacement tree.
The Chinese elm
replacement. The Chinese would be a great choice.